always better. You dish for the full upgrades. You dream of a cool Kickstarter with very low shipping rates. Just look at the games around you, right here on the ocean floor. Such wonderful things around you. What else are you looking for? Under the sea. Under the sea. Darling, it matters. Metal coins better. Take it from me.
What are you doing?
Up under.
What are you doing?
I'm recording. I'm recording the intro.
For what?
For our podcast. You said we were going to record underwater games.
No, I said underrated games.
Oh, okay. That makes a lot more sense. Huh.
Hi, I'm Gina.
And I'm Sharon.
And together, we're Jazz's Begancy.
Moving you from antsy to gancy.
And today...
Today... We're talking about games that are rated.
What?
Under. Underrated.
Underrated. Not underwater.
Not underwater.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And not overrated.
Not overrated.
Underrated.
How did you define underrated?
So underrated games are games that we enjoy. Uh-huh. We've had a good time with.
Uh-huh.
But they are ranked lower than 1,000 on the BGG overall ranking system.
Oh,
now, that said, I looked up these numbers, oh gosh, I think it was a month or two ago we started planning this episode.
Mm-hmm.
It might have changed by now.
Yeah.
But I think most of them are under enough, they're probably still below 1,000.
I think so.
Just know that the numbers I give you are probably wrong.
Mm-hmm.
All right, should we just like dive right in? No preamble?
Yeah, I don't know what amble you'd like to pre.
I don't know. I think we've already ambled it.
Okay,
cool.
What's your first...
All right, so I'm doing these in order of the least underrated to the most underrated. So we're basically starting with the game closest to 1,000. Does that make sense?
I think so.
Okay.
So the further down the podcast we go, the more underrated the game is.
Yes.
Okay.
Now, that doesn't necessarily mean we like it more, but yeah, we had to pick a way to order
them. You know,
them.
What's the difference between underrated games and under the radar games? Is there a difference, or are we just essentially, those are the same things?
No, I don't think so. I think under the radar games are games people don't necessarily know about.
Oh,
whereas these are, like, I think a lot of people know about a lot of these.
Yeah, fair.
They're just not as high up as we feel like they should be.
Okay, that works.
That sounded logical?
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Okay, let's dive in with number one. So, this game was, at the time, number 1,116, and that is Codex Naturalis.
Ooh, which, that's a beautiful game. Yes. And a beautiful little box.
I think we've talked about it before, but we're going to talk about it again because we like it that much. So, the game is by Thomas DuPont, and it's published by Bombyx. And I gotta shout out the artist because the art is just so beautiful. And that is by Maxime Morin.
I think the game itself is, the idea itself is relatively straightforward. There's not a lot of convolution in there. I really do feel that part of it is the aesthetic of the game and just how the cards are finished. It always gives me the sense of calm.
Yeah.
Beauty.
So what you're doing in this game, it's basically resource management with a little bit of a spatial puzzle. So everyone starts with one card. You can choose which side. It's either going to give you four resources, each on the corner. And the resources are things like leaves or little fox faces.
Little flowers.
Like very nature.
Butterflies.
Beautiful things. And on your turn, you're going to play a card from your hand and you're going to have to cover one of those corners, basically. So you're potentially losing a resource when you're playing a card, but you're playing out cards. Some cards will just give you straight points. Others are going to give you points based on other things you have in your tableau, et cetera, et cetera. There's public objectives where you're maybe trying to get certain color cards in a certain orientation, like a diagonal line or something like that.
Configuration.
Yep. There's other ones that are looking, you're going to get points based on how many symbols of a certain type you have.
The game has, outside of their normal resource symbols, the game also has three, I guess, special symbols. A quill, a little potion, and a scroll. And some of those, you know, gold embossed special symbols, you can, depending on the end of game scoring card that you'll pull, sometimes those symbols will help you score extra points.
Yeah, and a lot of the cards will give you points for those too. Mm-hmm. So it's basically, once you get used to it, it's a fairly straightforward resource management game where you're just trying to figure out, okay, what resources do I need right now? What card am I trying to play? What cards are available to pick up at the end of my turn? What am I trying to do? What makes the most sense? And then that spatial aspect comes in with that not all cards have spots on all four corners for you to play another card on top of them. So sometimes you have to choose, like, okay, I really do need to put this card here, but now I'm losing the opportunity to play, say, a card over its bottom left corner or something. So you have to make sure that what your long-term goals are going to work for where you're playing cards out. And yeah, as the game progresses and by the end, you look at your tableau and you just have this beautiful series of gorgeously illustrated cards. They have gold embossing on them, so they just pop. They're not linen finish, but they're very satisfying to hold. The only thing, like, they are little, but I think that's mm-hmm. necessary, because otherwise, like, this game takes up a fair amount of space, yeah. even with them being little. So I don't think it would work if they were any bigger.
No, I think the best way of describing the feel of this game is that in this game, I feel as though you're playing a fairy tale biologist. You know, you go into a fairy tale forest, there's none of the ick and muck and all that gross stuff. You're just going like, oh, it's just foxes and butterflies and beautiful things. And you're recording whatever you see in nature, hence putting down all those cards in the tableau.
And
you're
building way of thinking it.
The ecology. You're mapping out the, you know, ecosystem in that particular forest. This is always how I, you know, the general sense that it gives me.
I think the rulebook actually explains the quote-unquote theme.
Oh, okay.
I don't know that I've ever looked at it, maybe the first time. Does anyone really for a game like this?
I mean, Codex Naturalis, based on the name, I expect that it's someone jotting down and journaling what they find in nature. So, yeah, there you go.
Yeah, and I don't know that this game is widely available. And I think there's a couple different editions. We have the one that comes in a, you know, nice little tin. But I know a lot of people don't like tins. I think there is also a version where it comes in a box.
Oh, I like the tin. I think it's just, you know, the game is just so small and dainty and precious looking. The tin just sort of wraps everything up in a beautiful little box. It's just, there's something about this game that I just, it's one of those games that I'm always happy to play.
Yeah, there's nothing like, what's the word I'm looking for? There's nothing brand new about it. There's nothing exciting. There's no mechanism that makes you go like, oh, that's really cool. It's one of the few games where the first time we played it together, we played it 3 times in a row. Because mm-hmm. It's so relaxing and cozy, but also not relaxing. It's a little stressful, but it just keeps making you want to come back for more.
Yeah, and it's one of those games that, you know, for a brain like myself, I play a lot of games, probably because
really,
of
I had
you.
No idea. That's a surprise.
But I often just forget about the game. Like, you know, I remember playing that game. I remember, you know, having a good time or a bad time playing said game. But oftentimes I've completely forgotten the rules. And there are certain games that we would have played it multiple times and I'm still going back and I don't know how to play it. This is not one of them. It's just, there's something that's very natural. If I have to teach the game and set it up, I feel like I'd be able to. Which is saying quite a bit based on my brain.
Yeah, that is impressive.
Yeah.
And yeah, this is one game that you'll actually request. Whereas normally you're just happy to be like, oh, whatever you want to play is fine.
Yeah, I do like it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's Codex Naturalis. Mm-hmm. Next.
Next up.
So this is number 1,122, or it was. And this is one of the very first games in our collection and actually our very first co-op game. We got this when we didn't even know what a cooperative game was.
We've talked about this.
Have we?
I think, yeah, one or two times maybe. I think our first the first games, serious games that we bought was this one and Alchemist.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah, because we're like, eh, we like the art. We probably enjoy this. We've decided we like board games now. And so it's The Alchemist and
Dead Men Tell No Tales.
That's right. It's such a good game. And I don't know whether part of it is just the nostalgia of it being one of our first purchases.
It also gives you really strong Pirates of the Caribbean vibes, which is one of my, the first one is one of my favorite movies.
That's right. So we might be biased in those ways, but it is just, this one really is an underrated game.
We played it a lot.
Yeah.
Okay, but let's talk about how it plays.
Okay.
So in Dead Men Tell No Tales, you are playing as pirates and you're trying to loot, what's his name? I can't remember his name. The ship.
Blackbeard?
No, it's like Skellington's ship or something. You're trying to loot his ship. But the problem is his ship is on fire. I imagine that was probably our fault.
Maybe.
It probably happened anyway.
I don't think pirates are really good at planning out their actions potentially. You know, they just...
Okay, I need to throw in a random pirate fact.
Oh, gosh.
Did you know that pirates were potentially like the first group? They basically offered like... health benefits and like insurance. If you got injured as a pirate or like lost a limb or an eye or something, you got paid for it. Like you were reimbursed. You were compensated and they would support you.
Workers' comp?
Yeah, workers' comp. And then they'd make like, what's the word? I work in this field. This is really embarrassing. They would make adjustments. Like they'd adjust the job so you can still participate.
Oh, like accommodations.
Accommodations. They would make accommodations.
Oh, wow. That's like, who knew? Pirates.
I've been making part of that up. But I heard it on a podcast, so I'm pretty sure I'm not.
Well, if you heard it on a podcast.
And obviously all podcasts tell the truth, right?
Yeah.
Like, we wouldn't lie to you.
No.
So, there you go. That's your pirate fact of the day.
So, really, this game is just about running a very progressive, really employee-focused corporation. Yes,
absolutely.
And helping, you know, you're on a special project.
Mm-hmm.
And you're trying to make sure that this company is lucrative and can continue to fund its high caliber workers' compensation really just occupational health and safety / accommodations program.
So like really root for the pirates. And I'm saying like the pirates from like 1600s, 1800s, not like today's pirates because I'm digressing. Back to Dead Men Tell No Tales.
I mean, they are still looting and raiding things and general thievery.
Yeah, but it's
not thievery.
The same when there's... Oh, I guess they had guns back then, too.
Yeah. Huh. But I guess if they're looting imperialist colonists, then it's better? I don't know. We're in a really weird gray area here.
And we should probably... stop digging deeper
okay.
holes. Okay, right. Back to Dead Men Tell No Tales this time, actually. So what you're doing is you are trying to get on this ship and you're trying to find the treasure. This is complicated because in every room on the ship, there's a die that's telling you what the fire value is.
Mm-hmm.
At a certain point, if that gets too high, that room is going to explode. And it's then going to, you know, it explodes outwards, as explosions do.
Yes.
So it can raise the fire level in adjacent rooms.
Of course.
And those can then be triggered to explode outwards.
Real big chain reactions.
Some of them have barrels. They're going to shoot through into the next room, make things even worse. And on top of all that, you only know a little bit of the ship when you start, because at the start of your turn, you're having to explore and basically reveal a new room. Populate it with certain things and add that fire die.
Don't they have undead pirates there too?
Yeah, you've got your deckhands. They're just like cute little skeleton heads.
Right.
And you got to watch out for them.
Oh.
There are the undead creatures. You have to sometimes duel with them to get to the chests.
Oh, okay.
There is Skellington. No, that can't be right because that would be copyrighted. There's the dude himself that you have to duel to get the treasure chest. And basically you have to get enough treasure. And you not only do you have to find it, you have to get it off of the boat, back to yours. And you have to make sure, too, like, as you're progressing, you might start closing things off. And there's always that one entrance and exit. But if those rooms blow up near the front, that kind of blocks that exit. So you're going to have to go through all the tiles and find another way off the boat. And it gets very complicated. This is basically Pandemic. It is Pandemic style, but this is Pandemic on steroids.
Well, and the funny thing, too... is that if you're the character you're playing, the pirate you're playing, dies and you're not at the full player count, you can play.
You just hop on with a new pirate.
A new pirate.
And each pirate has their own unique ability. And this is really tough because you've got movement. So, you know, a la Pandemic, you can move around. But in this game, you will take exhaustion based on the difference in fire level between the room you started and the room you move into. So if it's higher, that's going to increase your exhaustion. And if you get too exhausted, you die. Can you get shot? I feel like you'll get shot. You can get overrun by deckhands.
There is a pistol that you could use.
Oh, yeah.
The pirate playing pirate.
Okay, clearly we haven't played this for a little while, but it's solid. I think the only downside and maybe why this game isn't as popular is that it is a little finicky. Fiddly? There's a lot going on. There's a lot of little rules you have to remember. And once you've internalized them, it's not too bad. If you have even one person at being a co-op at the table that has everything down pat, they can keep the game moving. But it's just a really interesting puzzle. I remember when we first played it, we lost and we're immediately like, all right, run it back, playing it again. And we just kept playing until we finally won.
This game, so most people know I'm not the biggest fan of co-ops, primarily because I hate losing to dead things or unalive things.
Like cardboard. I think these guys are also undead because skeletons.
Okay, well.
Skeletons. I can't talk.
I generally don't like that. But this is one of the games, co-op games, that is quite challenging to win, I'd say.
Yeah.
And I'm okay with it. I'm actually.
Really? Is that, do you think, though, because it was our first co-op?
Maybe. I don't know.
Like, is it that nostalgia or?
I don't know.
It's so thematic?
Maybe. I have no idea. But for some reason, I don't mind losing. And maybe we need to do an episode on the why when I figure it out finally and I can reflect.
Maybe we need
on
to
that.
Play it again.
Maybe.
Yeah, we should pull it out. It deserves to be played.
It's one of those co-op games that you don't really mind losing too much. It's also, I think I would say, it actually plays relatively quick. And maybe that's why you're not sinking a really long time into the game before.
Yeah, when things start going wrong, they go really wrong.
Yeah.
And it's also one, I brought it home and played it with my parents, specifically my dad, and he really enjoyed it.
Yeah, and he's not a big board game person.
No.
So.
But he thought, like, it's an interesting puzzle.
Yeah, there's a lot of thinking. There's a lot of truly cooperation. Well, we need you to come over here to manage the fire. And I will use this player because they're really good at, I don't know, their speed's really good. So I'm going to go through these rooms. And then you have another person that's able to manage attack. So it does feel like a team effort rather than having just like an alpha player or one player that's being the tank and doing everything else.
Yeah, I think you can still have an alpha player problem, can like point out, you need to do this, you need to do that. But everyone feels like they're contributing something because everyone's special ability is useful.
Yes, I think so. I think maybe that's why. Like you never feel like it's this one player that's doing all of the attacks.
Yeah,
and
like
all
there's
of the things.
There's the odd role in Pandemic and you're just like, is this ever useful? Like or you only get to use your ability like once or twice. Where in this game, I think everyone's going to be using their ability every time. It has a Kraken expansion that we do not have because we don't play this enough to need it. Nope. But that looks fun.
There you go.
Dead Men Tell No Tales. Yes, that was Dead Men Tell No Tales. Oh, and if I didn't say it, this game is by Kane Klenko and published by Minion Games, or at least our version is. We usually forget to say who designed it, who published it. We're trying to be better, though.
Trying.
Is the operative word. Yeah. Okay, next game.
Next game is Habitats.
Number 1,395. And this one is by Corne Van Moorsel and was originally published by Swally Games. And is now that new edition is published by All Play, formerly BoardGameTables.com. And this is one that, especially with the new iteration, I expected to be much higher ranked.
Yeah, I agree. Because I really thought that it was not highly ranked because of weird art.
And it's just not widely available anymore. But with the new one, it is. And the new art is... Oh, actually, has it shipped yet? No, it's out. Yeah, it's out.
Oh, the new art's different.
Yeah. Okay, well, Sharon's doing her homework as we're talking.
Yeah.
Okay, so in Habitats,
you are basically building out, I'm not even going to say a zoo, I'm going to say a wild animal park. Because you're trying to build
safari.
Out a safari park.
Mm-hmm.
You're trying to build out, shockingly, habitats to house your different animals. And each tile, or most tiles, are going to have a habitat type in the background, like maybe a forest or desert, like rocky area or water. Mm-hmm. And then most of them are also going to have an animal on the top. And each animal has a certain requirements of habitats that they need to thrive.
Mm-hmm.
So you put a tile down and you're going to put it adjacent to a previous tile. And you need to be able to connect the habitats that you need. So if your animal, say, needs two grasslands, one water, and one rock, you have to, adjacent to that initial tile, you have to have at least one grassland. Now that grassland can then be adjacent to another grassland that's not adjacent to the original tile, and that's fine. Then your original tile needs to be adjacent to one rock and one water. Does that make sense? Probably not, because this is a podcast and it's a very visual game and it's hard to explain. But it makes sense once you start playing. Kind of the newer like iterations of this that are more popular, I think there is
Do they make a rule?
Nova Luna.
Oh,
Nova okay. Luna, and then Sagani and Framework as well. And Uwe Rosenberg, yes, Uwe Rosenberg, paired with Cornet to make Nova Luna. And then he just, Uwe kind of took over and did some more iterations on it.
Mm.
But the core principle is very much from Habitats, that one where you're trying to connect like tiles together. And then basically once an animal has all of its requirements satisfied, you can score it. There's also a couple other things going on with roads where you need to have roads need to be on the very edge of your park, that you can't put another tile adjacent to them, and you'll score points for those. There's
round
some
end
flowers.
Scoring.
Yes, there's round end scoring. And there's also kind of an interesting tile drafting mechanism. I think in the new version, this makes more sense. You're driving a little Jeep. So everyone has a little Jeep meeple. And it's in this shared grid of tiles. So everyone's driving around the same grid of tiles. And basically you can either take the tile straight in front of your Jeep, which makes sense because mm-hmm. your head is straight, or you can turn left and take the tile to the left of your Jeep, or turn right and take the tile to the right of the Jeep. However, these Jeeps do not have reverse. These were designed in horseless carriage.
Yes.
And
but they have an engine, though.
They have an engine, but you cannot back up.
Just no reverse.
Yeah. And so when you take a tile, like say I took the tile to the left, I'm going to turn my little Jeep icon 90 degrees to the left and move it forwards. So that's going to dictate what tiles I have available to me next time. And then the spot I left gets refilled with the new tile. Mm. So there's kind of that added little navigation puzzle when you're trying to figure out which tiles you want and how you're going to get there, and hope no one takes them before you because you are sharing a grid. And I think more than any other game I've ever played, this game really puts me into that flow state.
Oh, okay.
Like I can
tell
just sit there, focus between looking at my animal park and looking at that like tile selection area. I can just purely focus. I feel so relaxed. It's just, oh, yeah, that tile's good. Oh, maybe this one. I don't know what it is about this game, but it's just, it's very relaxing. With two players, it plays really quickly. We can knock out a game in about 30 minutes. And for me, it's just pure, there is no time where you get, like, you have enough time to be distracted away from the game with two players. Because there's so many things to consider. So as soon as you take your turn and you put something down, you're immediately trying to consider, okay, I could do this tile. Oh, should I put this tile here? Okay, wait, let me double check. What is that end round goal? Yeah, okay, then this tile. Like it just flows in a way that I think Nova Luna doesn't, because Nova Luna uses a tile selection mechanism from Patchwork. So it's who's ever in the back. So you can't really plan your next turn because you have no idea how long it is until your next turn and what tiles are going to be available. Because like Patchwork, it's only the three ahead of the marker.
I mean, between Habitats and Nova Luna, having played both, I definitely prefer Habitats, even with the weird art.
Yeah, our edition does have weird art.
Yeah.
But Sharon won't let me get the new one.
No, because we already have the game. And also, you're in a game to not buy games. That's two reasons.
Eventually, it'll just be one.
I don't think this game gives me as much of a flow state as it gives you. It's still a very, very good game. I think sometimes some part of the frustration, and not in a bad way, but part of the frustration is that, you know, you've just taken a card and you reveal the next card because it's a closed system. Grid, right? And then that's the tile that you've been looking for all along. And it takes so long for you to turn around. It's going to take
at least three turns. Like on your third turn, you can grab it.
Yeah. Which is just
if no one else grabs it first.
But I think that's just the, a part of the game too. And there's something that's really satisfying where you're planning, territories and landscapes out, and you can find just the right animal that would take those landscapes, and you can immediately score it rather than getting the animal first and then trying to curate their environment for them. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's something about this game that really makes it very, very, very pleasing.
Now, I will say the scoring in this game is a little fiddly, the end game scoring, because you have to go through your grid very carefully. In the version we have, they just had basically if your animal wasn't satisfied, it was upside down in your grid. And then when you've satisfied everything, you'd, turn it around. So it's right side up, which was a bit of a pain because you have to, if you had bigger fingers, especially trying to get in there, get that tile when it's surrounded by other tiles and turn it over. Just a little annoying. The new addition gives you tokens basically to mark off, oh, this one is now satisfied. Oh. Which I don't know why I didn't even think of doing that with the original. We've got extra tokens. We could have done that. I think you could even like the add-on Kickstarter, you could get
isn't that shaped just equally meeples. Isn't that just equally finicky? Now you're adding something on top of the tile instead of flipping it.
You just take a token and put it on top of that tile to mark that it's done.
Yeah, but then the token can jostle around and
you don't really jostle your layout. I guess there's cats.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like I feel like
but you can if you got the animals add-on, then all there's basically a unique meeple for every single animal tile.
Okay, of course.
And you grab that and you put it down. Now, I've heard it's actually more of a pain trying to find. There's like 75 some animals, so it's actually a bit of a pain trying to find the right one. but it would be very pretty.
I am interested in playing this game with the new edition of it just to see.
I haven't actually seen it anywhere. We'll have to – it'd be interesting to see if they changed anything around.
Right. But, habitats.
Yeah, it's really good. Really good. All right. Moving right along. Next is game number 2587.
Another one that starts with an H.
And this is Haven, which is by Elf Siegert, published by Red Raven Games, and of course, with art by Ryan Lockett. I think this one really is like another seriously underrated. A lot of people haven't heard of this game. This one might be under the radar too.
I really like this game. And I say it, even though it's been a while since we've played it, and I probably have forgotten about how to play it.
Yeah.
But so I remember every time we play it, I quite enjoy it.
I definitely had to pull out the little player aid to remind myself how to play it. And in Haven, it's a two-player only game. And you are either playing as the forest guardians spirits versus the probably evil city dweller mechanized people who are trying to come into the forest.
They just look like steampunky animatronics.
Yeah, they actually look kind of cool. And what you're doing is you're competing to put your shrines down on kind of the little intersections. And within these intersection kind of roads around here, there are havens. And as soon as a haven is fully surrounded, whoever has the majority of shrines on it gets to claim that haven. So you've got an area majority thing going on for scoring. You're basically playing, they're called seeker cards, out to lore tokens that are placed out. And you're competing to try and claim those lore tokens. And the lore tokens are going to be used in endgame scoring. Those are kind of the two main scoring mechanisms. And at the end of the game, you're getting points from whoever controls the most havens gets the Haven Guardian card, and that's going to give them 5 points. Then there's three different types of lore tokens, and whoever has the highest value of them, because they're all worth different values, some are more
basically worth more than others. Whoever has the highest value in each type gets that corresponding elemental card, which is going to give you endgame scoring. Mm-hmm. Plus, you're getting, you know, a point for each of your shrines that's out there. And as well, you're getting one victory point for each lore token you have. So there's a few different areas you're trying to compete on. And it's just a very twisty, brain-bendy game. I think you like this one more than I do. So I will let you kind of talk about what it is that draws you in so much, other than the beautiful art.
I have no idea, because I've already forgotten how to play this game. I just remember the feeling. You know how when people say, you know, you might not remember the exact words of the other person, but you remember how that person made you feel. And this game made me feel good. So that's my in-depth analysis on Haven. Wow. A great game, because I just remember good times and it being a non-frustrating game that I enjoyed with beautiful art.
Podcasting brilliance right here. You heard it here first, guys. It made Sharon feel good.
It made me feel good. This game,
you should buy it, makes because
me feel good. And yeah, you should buy it because it's a good game.
Yeah, so I remember a lot of the game, there is kind of a bluffing mechanism. When you're playing Seekers down and competing for those lore tokens, if you're playing it from your hand, you can choose to play the Seeker face down. Or you can draw blindly from the deck and place them face up, and you're competing. They have different weapons on them. You're going pew pew, but maybe you, if you win, usually you're the one who takes the lore token, but it's also tied into placing out your shrines. So there's kind of two different things, your lore value and the weapons on your secret cards that you're trying to balance. Figure out, okay, you don't know for sure what the other player's doing because some cards may be face down. At the end of each round, you have to make an offering onto a matching lore token, so you don't know for sure when it's going to score either. Everyone also has some lore cards that give you powers, so you can, you know, adjust things mid-game that the other person maybe couldn't have predicted that you would do. But I think if you played this a lot, there is little enough that you could learn all the powers, and you could try and plan for every scenario. So I think there's enough depth in this for there to be that really smart, repeated, strategic play. But you can also just, like, obviously we do, you know, jump in, play it once every year or two, and have a nice time.
Can't believe you threw me under the bus and asked what my opinion was.
But you like the game so much.
I really like the game, but I've forgotten what the game is. But I really like it. I remember it made me feel really happy.
Yeah, because I felt fairly meh. I was like, oh, yeah, we could probably let this one go. And you were like, absolutely not.
No, I really liked it.
Okay.
It was great. It made me feel good.
Okay. Well, that's our hot take, is that it makes Sharon feel good.
It's a good game. Make me feel good.
Okay. Excellent.
Feel good. Bye, game.
All right. Well, moving on.
Okay. This other game also makes me feel good.
So this is the last game on our list. It is ranked at 3,923.
Seriously, that's so far behind. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And it is Cover Your Assets by Grandpa Beck Games. This is the kind of game you're going to find in almost every store, whether it's a game store or not. It's just one of those games that's kind of everywhere, and I think it doesn't really look or feel like a hobby game, so people dismiss it. Is it a hobby game? Maybe not. But you know what? We've had a lot of fun with this game.
We were first introduced it in one of your family reunions. Mm-hmm. Your cousin actually brought it over. It was
cousin's friend.
Oh, okay.
And there's a group of five or six of us playing. And we missed most of the rules explanation.
Yeah, and we just kind of jumped in and played.
Figured it out, kind of. It was pretty straightforward. So yeah, and Cover Your Assets. Basically, you're trying to be a millionaire. Because everyone probably wants to be a millionaire. Mm-hmm. I don't know. So you're doing that by hiding assets. So everyone starts out with their little nest egg. That's their first asset. So you're playing a card from your hand down in front of you. And your cards could be anything from, you know, a collection of baseball cards, which, yeah, they're worth some money, but not spectacular.
Or, you know, money under a mattress. Mm-hmm. As one does.
Yep. Or maybe it's a luxury car, you know, getting pricier, some fancy jewelry. Or maybe it's a mansion.
It's a mansion. Mm-hmm. I was going to go from was going to go from luxury car to stocks, but all right.
Oh, I mean, forgot about the stocks.
Mansions are a thing too.
Weird, but ethereal things.
It's funny to think that your mansion doesn't quite make you a millionaire just yet. This must have been. That's why it was designed by Grandpa Bex.
Yeah.
It's very sort of.
In the ye olde times.
Okay.
All right. So no one can touch your nest egg. But as the game progresses, you're going to be laying down sets of the same type of asset, and you're covering the asset that's below it. Fancy that. You're also trying to, basically you want big sets of expensive things. However, once you've played down a set, you can't add to that set. However, what you can do is go look, oh, look, Sharon has, you know, a nice house there. I want to get in on that. I think I'm going to go steal her house. I don't know how this works in real life. Like if I just go bash the door on it. Anyways, so on my turn, I can choose, instead of putting down a set on my pile, I can choose to show her a house card. Be like, hey, I want your house. And if she might just have to give up and be like, oh, okay, I guess you get the house. So I get her two houses and I add my card to it.
Ha-ha! But what if in my hand, I also have, we're talking about mansions now, right?
Yes.
I also have another mansion card. So you put out a seductive mansion to attract my bond paired mansions.
It makes no sense.
And then I go, ha, no, Uno reverse card, because I also have another mansion card.
But then you know what?
Uh-huh.
I have another, I don't have another mansion card, but I have a gold card.
A gold card?
That's worth like 50 grand.
That's not
and it's
cool.
A wild. So I can be like, no, I really want that mansion. And this can go on and on until someone gives up or doesn't have a card that they can add. And whoever the winner is gets to take, you know, the cards that first player had that they're stealing from, plus all the cards that were played in that, you know, little battle. So you can grow some big nest eggs, but if it's on the top of your stack, it's in danger. You got to cover it with something else. But then someone's probably going to try and steal that thing you covered it with to expose your other ones or to get... It's a whole big thing, but we've had a lot of fun with it.
I think it really requires the right people.
Yes.
And generally, I think, and that's true for a lot of party games, and I consider this party-ish, right?
It's pretty light. It's silly. It's, I mean, sure, there's strategy, but it's also kind of
gotta play with people that are in the mood to just be silly and have fun.
And basically, you're just going to keep playing round after round until you're done with it or until someone's a millionaire.
Yeah. Because in the past, we've also played with some people that are quite competitive and really try to game the game.
Yeah.
And that just kind of made it less
fun. No, that wasn't fun for anyone.
Because there's definitely luck in there. And so...
You need to be in it for the lols. And it's really funny when someone is so proud that they won this huge battle. They just added five cards, you know, a gold card and a silver card. This stack of assets is just going to be worth so much at the end of the game. They put it on their pile. They're so excited. And the next person shows them another mansion. And they used up all of theirs to try and get that pile. So now it's someone else's.
That's right.
It's that kind of game.
Mm-hmm.
And it's cheap, widely available.
And there's a, it's not an expansion. There's
a more gamery version of it called Cover Your Kingdom.
Which is also a really great game, very similar in the sort of base game mechanics, but they add a little bit more of the intricacies in it.
Yeah, there's like you're basically playing different magical creatures.
Mm-hmm.
And if I remember correctly, different magical creature types have different powers. The problem I think with that is it probably is a better game and more strategic, but it's still the really light LOL type party game. And there's just enough extra rules overhead that I think the type of people you're more likely to play Cover Your Assets with aren't going to want to learn that extra rules overhead.
I agree.
And you're less likely to play Cover Your Kingdom with gamery people because you're going to be playing something else.
Yeah.
So it sits in a weird position.
We have both versions of the game because we liked Cover Your Assets so much. We were like, well, might as well get Cover Your Kingdom. And I think between the two games... if I'm feeling in the mood to play a game of that sort, I reach for the original Cover Your
Assets. Yeah, I think we played Cover Your Kingdom once.
Yeah.
Yeah. But there's still, I you know, it's worth trying. If you've got the right group and you're in the right mood, it can be a lot of fun. I still remember that first play. We were laughing so hard. We were crying. Like, it was just one of my favorite gaming experiences.
That's right. Lots of sort of take that and I'm going to steal this and, you know, an opportunity to create some in-jokes too.
Yes. There's something about, what was it, genealogy somehow got in there? Yeah. Anyways, yeah. It was a good time.
Things were said. Insults were hurled. It was a great time.
Yep. Mm-hmm. That's like the perfect evening for us, basically.
Exactly. Perfect evening. So what do you think? Are there other underrated games that you think we should talk about that you've played?
What are your favorite underrated games?
Let us know.
You can reach out to us through Instagram, through our guild on BoardGameGeek.
Rumor has it, we also have a Discord.
We do have a Discord. Mm-hmm. Do I remember to go on there? Not super often. But if people start interacting, maybe I'll remember.
And while you're at it, remember to give us a review, a rating, and hey, if you're feeling particularly kind, tell a friend. Any rating and reviews on wherever you listen to your podcasts, make sure that other people that enjoy similar podcasts as you do will be able to find us.
Yes. And with that, stay Gantsy.
Happy gaming! Just seven.